is in black and white. Images of Inspector Jack Frost, serious and contemplative, are interspersed with shots of a dead body, the barrel of a gun, and an empty lamplit street. David Jason stars in A Touch of Frost, based on the characters by R.D. Wingfield. Frost appears behind a barred iron door. He smiles wryly and closes it. Tonight's episode is entitled Line of Fire. Brick cooling towers of a distant power station rise into a murky sky, belching pools of white smoke. A container barge, piled high with coal, slips along a river. A huge iron crane with gripping arms manoeuvres into position, grabbing the floating container. The arms push the container along a waterway towards another empty container. This has huge holes ready to receive the coal. Credits appear. Screenplay by Michael Russell. Produced by Lars McFarlane. Directed by Robert Knights. A gangplank runs along the side of the empty container. A man in a hard hat and boiler suit walks across, inspecting the machinery. A huge hoist begins to winch the container, heaped with coal, out of the water. The container is winched onto its side. The coal starts to drip out, then spills from it like a waterfall into the empty container below. The foreman has lit a cigarette. He leans on the safety rail, watching the coal spew down before him. Suddenly the rail snaps, and the man falls into the container, the torrents of coal burying him alive. Inside the power plant, a young man answers a phone.
Control.
The man, wearing a white lab coat, leans forward.
I see.
He stands looking about the control room.
What sort of accident? How bad? Okay. Yeah. She's here. I'll bring her down.
The good-looking, dark-haired young man, Ray English, puts the phone down, staring concernedly. Outside, an ambulance is making its way through the plant. Workers stretcher the body of the man out onto the forecourt, laying it on the concrete. A young girl, also in a white lab coat, races up to it, pursued by Ray. She tugs at the lifeless body.
Tracy!
Frost and Trigg are having breakfast in a cafe. Frost consults a piece of paper.
Trigg, look at this. Look, 96 quid. I never use the phone. Do you think that someone could be tapping into my line? They do that with electricity, you know. Yeah, that's a point. The bloke next door's draining the national grid with his Christmas lights. Do you think I could nick some of his power?
Hey, you got your Christmas lights up then, Jack?
I might change the kitchen bulb from a 60 to 100 watt, that's about it.
What are you doing over Christmas, then?
Right. My sister-in-law in Canada always invites me over, but I know they go.
Well, you should, buddy, yeah. Why not?
Because she knows that if she asks, I'll never go.
At Denton Police Station...
Oh, Jack, yeah. Have you read that report on the burglary at Kimmington?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Dorridge wants me to take a look. He reckons there's a pattern. Honestly, the time detectives take finding patterns, it's a wonder they don't take up knitting.
A man with a basket.
Well?
What?
Frost peers into it.
I wouldn't bother with a vet, sir.
This cat has been shot. Oh,
not another one.
Yeah.
In the car park, a young uniformed WPC closes the boot of her car. Frost notices her.
You're new, are you, Constable?
Yes, sir.
Well, get a transfer. I won't say that we've exactly been forgotten by HQ, but the Red Cross still drops food parcels by parachute.
Well, I'm just here on attachment, sir.
Ah, well, very sensible. Have you go in there, you'll find Sergeant Brady at the front desk. You can't miss him. He's the one with the dead cat.
The pretty policewoman, Susan Kavanagh, blinks confusedly as Frost climbs into his car. She strides into Denton Station. Later, Frost stops his pale blue Volvo outside a house on an estate overlooked by the cooling towers. An elderly lady in her front garden notices Frost approaching the house next door to her. No answer. He steps into the porch.
Hello? Hello?
The front door's open. He pushes it and wanders in. A Christmas tree is strewn across the lounge floor. Decorations and cards have been torn down. Christmas debris covers the entire carpet. The elderly lady walks in.
Oh, Mrs. Cockcroft?
I'm her neighbour. She's out.
I'm Detective Inspector Frost, Denton CID. I'm looking for my sergeant. He came about the burglary.
The lady stares at a broken fish tank.
It was the fish that upset him most. Tracy told me that. I smashed the tank. Killed all his fish.
Yes. Sorry, do you know if my sergeant...
Oh, your sergeant was here. He took her, Mrs. Cockcroft, in his car. Mr. Cockcroft... There's been an accident at the power station. He's dead.
At the power station, Tracy Cockcroft supports her weeping mother as paramedics wheel Mr. Cockcroft's body to an ambulance. Other employees crowd around. Inspector Frost's Volvo arrives. Detective Sergeant Dorridge is waiting for him.
All right, what happened?
He was up there. Skived off for a fag. Looks as if a rail gave way. He might have survived the fall, but not the 100 tons of coal that landed on top of him. I doubt the Cockcroft will be that worried about a burglary.
Ray watches. He's with the young man in a boiler suit, Sam Goodwin.
It's a tough break, Sammy. Tough break.
Ray pats Sam, then disappears up a stairway. Sam, reflective, dons his hard hat, then follows. A Christmas promotion is taking place in a huge Mercedes car showroom. Silver and turquoise decorations hang above the gleaming cars as guests mill about sipping wine. A woman in a low-cut black dress and tight-waisted silver jacket chats to a suited middle-aged man with a hard-looking face. The manager, Mr. Davidson, an obsequious-looking man, strides up to a younger man and whispers something to him, then breaks away. The younger man stares after Davidson, his brow furrowed. Davidson approaches the svelte-looking woman, Miriam Madicani, and the hard-faced man, Dick Rycroft.
So, how's it going? You all set for Christmas? Going away?
Marbella.
Barbados.
Oh, I'm sorry. I sort of assumed you two...
Strictly business with us, Mr. Davidson. I am the brains and the beauty. What is it you do, Dick?
Madicani moves away, leaving Davidson to chat to her associate. The young man watches.
Have you got it?
Davidson nervously fishes in his pocket and hands Rycroft a disc. Madicani pretends not to notice. The young man clocks the transaction.
And a prosperous new year.
They raise their glasses. Nighttime, the young man from the showroom has driven to a reservoir. He gets out of his car and wanders over to a stone wall overlooking the water, the light from a lamp illuminating his face. He takes a bite from a burger and chews, looking about. He turns as if hearing someone approaching and moves forward, smiling. A sudden flash of white light. The next day, the area by the reservoir where the young man stood has been cordoned off. Frost arrives in his car. He ducks under the tape and joins Detective Sergeant Dorridge.
Tim Fox, Detective Constable, Regional Crime Squad. One shot, close range.
Time?
Doctor's estimates between 9 and midnight. Found this morning by a Mrs. Hardy about 8 o'clock. She's walking her dog. Looks as if he was standing by the lake eating a burger.
Frost puts on a latex glove and follows Dorridge behind a police screen. They look down at the body of Tim Fox, which lies sprawled over some rocks.
Any sign of another vehicle?
No, nothing yet. There is something you should see, though. Yeah.
Inside Fox's car, Dorridge opens the glove compartment and pulls out an envelope. Opening it, he reveals a wad of banknotes.
Close on £1,000.
Well, he wasn't mugged then, was he?
Well, here comes the cavalry.
A police vehicle speeds to the scene. On its heels, a maroon Vauxhall Omega. Frost grimaces as Detective Sergeant Finley steps out. He's middle-aged and suave-looking, wearing a grey Macintosh. He strides up to Frost.
Jack! Sir, behind Mark Newcomb, Jack Frost.
Newcomb steps forward.
What happened?
Well, so far, all we know is he's been shot.
Finley strides to the screen, snapping on a latex glove. Grimly, he examines the corpse. The others follow.
Thanks for getting things started, Jack. Much appreciated.
Getting started?
Tim's one of mine. Besides, We know the people who did it. I can't just walk away from the scene of crime without my senior officer.
It's already done. Superintendent Mullet has agreed you hand the case over to me.
Frost, knocked back, swallows angrily.
Well, there's a large sum of money in your DC's car. I doubt it was his Christmas bonus.
Finley glares at Frost. Later, Frost's Volvo parks outside the elegant entrance of the Crown Hotel. Frost enters the plush hotel lobby. He walks up to a board. It reads, "The Crown welcomes Denton and District Press Club's Christmas lunch." Uniformed officers mingle at the luncheon, including Superintendent Mallet. He spots Frost and greets him with a disdainful look.
What are you doing here?
We've got a problem.
I couldn't wait.
No, it seems I've been kicked off my investigation by Detective Superintendent Finley on your orders.
Look, this tragic murder is clearly related to the Regional Crime Squad's investigation. They have months of information and surveillance. All the evidence for some quick arrests.
That means they've got all the answers before anyone's asked the questions.
I can't have my CID officers duplicating the work of others.
But it's not a decision you should have made without telling me, sir.
I'm sorry, Jack. It's Finley's case, and that's the end of it.
Frost straightens his jacket indignantly, then spots someone. A twinkle appears in his eye.
Sir, is that the Chief Constable?
He's the guest of honour.
Ah, sir! Hi.
Hello, Jack. Hi. Long time.
Yes, nice to see you again, sir.
It's not your sort of do. Not mine, really.
No. I'm just a gatecrasher, so I've just popped in to see Mr. Mullet. We've got a problem. But it's a serious one for the force, but Mr. Mullet is sorting it out.
Well, it's not really a problem.
It's about D.C. Fox's murder, sir. Mr. Mullet is concerned, quite rightly too, sir, that the investigation is being run by the Regional Crime Squad. Thank you, that's very nice of you. Thank you very much, yeah. See, there may be a very good reason why D.C. Fox had £1,000 in cash in the glove compartment of the car, see. But it's not going to look very good for the press, is it? When they find out that the inquiry is being held by his own governor and all his old mates.
I didn't know. You're quite right, Mullet. We must be seen to be beyond reproach in these matters. Put Jack back in. I'll leave you to talk to Finley. If he's got a problem with it, you tell him it was my decision. Have a good Christmas, Jack.
Thank you, and you, sir. Very good, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, lunch is served.
Excuse me. Just before you go into lunch, I wonder if you'd mind making that phone call to Finley.
Yes.
No, if you could do it now, sir, because I know how these lunches tend to drag on. Is a phone at reception, sir?
At Ray's house.
Everyone knows smoking's banned on site. I mean, that's a dangerous spot. I mean, the safety rails are as rusty as hell. And he was breaking the rules, so he wouldn't reckon on compensation.
That's hardly what the Cockcross are going to be worried about now.
Yeah, but if they play their cards right and hit the bosses with a bad publicity, they could score a lot of money.
Is that all you can say?
I've got to go.
He hands his dad a beer.
Listen, I want to pay my respects. Can you drop in? Give Mrs. Cockcroft my condolences. If I go round, she'll only feel she's got to ask me in, and she can do without the fuss.
Still keeping up appearances, Dad. Why don't you say you can't be bothered?
Frost drives through an industrial estate. He chomps a sandwich, stuffing it into his mouth as he steers a corner into a road banked by warehouses. An oncoming silver Audi swings into Frost's path. Frost swerves, narrowly missing the vehicle. Frost pulls up alongside it. The young driver yells at him.
Try looking where you're bloody well going.
Frost calmly puts down his sandwich and contemplates the young man.
I'm Detective Inspector Frost, Denton CID. Got an appointment with your governor. Where is he?
In there.
Oh. Perhaps you'd be kind enough to show me. And it's mind where you're bloody well going, sir. All right?
Now, it's not about keeping information back. But it is about what Detective Inspector Frost needs to know and what he doesn't. We already know who shot Tim Fox. And we're going to make sure they all go down for it for so long they'll be lucky to come out on Zimmer frames. But we've got to make sure Denton CID don't frighten off our villains before we get a chance to move in. There's a lot of Tim's work in this, and he wouldn't thank us if we let a bunch of plods screw it up. Oh, and one more thing. You bastards will all retire without being half the detective Jack Frost is. Just remember that. So whatever he wants, you haven't got the answer. Even if it's only the weight of the bog, you still send him to me. OK?
Frost listens at the doorway of Finley's control centre.
Oh,
Let's just call it a backhanded compliment, Jack.
I very rarely get compliments from senior officers, backhanded or otherwise. Still, beggars can't be choosers.
Finley gives Frost a sideways glance.
Right. Let's get to it!
Finley's officers get back to work. Sam Goodwin slumped in a chair in his small flat, reading. He rises and goes to the door. Ray's face is at the frosted window. Sam opens the door.
Right, we're drinking.
No, we're going to kerosene.
Of course we're drinking.
The lads go. Outside the flats, on a walkway...
I want to call in at the Cockcroft's later.
What for?
And for our condolences.
You got anything else gross lined up?
Tracy won't think it's gross.
Hey?
There's nothing women go for like a bit of compassion. You know, shoulder a crime. You still fancy it, don't you?
Yeah, right.
You know, Sammy, it's a well-known fact that when women experience death, I mean of those close to them, they have a deep-seated need to screw. Call it an affirmation of life and all that.
You're the one who fancied Tracy.
Oh, I see. So you don't want my cast-offs, is that what you're saying?
You rewriting history already. She chucked you when her old man told you to steer clear or else.
And that little pillock of a mate who follows you around. Yeah, I think those were his precise words.
Oi, I don't follow anyone.
Ray grimaces and the lads get in a car and drive off. Finley shows Frost down a staircase of the temporary control centre where his squad are based, to a workshop floor full of executive cars being worked on by mechanics.
So, basically it's about stolen cars. Top of the line stuff. Mercs, Jags, BMW, Lexus. It's thieving on a grand scale. In a year they'll shift maybe 1,000 motors.
What's this place, then? Is this where you give them a service and an MOT and send them back to the owners? What?
These cars are being cloned with the identities of other vehicles that we want nicked. After they're stolen, they'll be shipped out of Europe. At the moment, it's mainly West Africa, South Africa. It's like drugs. No point closing down the dealer if the network stays intact. We need vehicles that can be followed through the distribution chain to the other end by police in Cape Town, Lagos, wherever.
So you plant your own?
We use satellite tracking system.
Oh, yeah. Have we reached the limit of what you intend to let me know yet, sir?
Jack, after 18 months, we're close to a result. When we go in, it will be with other auto theft squads in Europe and Africa. I meant it when I said that Tim wouldn't want your murder investigation to blow all our work apart.
Later in the control centre, Finley shows Frost a board full of photographs.
Now, these are foot soldiers mostly. Drivers, thieves, forgers, heavies. Body shops will do work on the side. Car salesmen will pass on the names and addresses of their customers. Freight companies will provide forged manifests. Over here.
Mugshots of the showroom couple.
Now, here we have Dick Rycroft, Miriam Maricani. He's English, she's South African. They run the British end. And they're the ones who are responsible for Tim's death. Pull them now. In 12 hours, the whole network will vanish.
So you reckon he was shot by this mob?
I don't reckon. I know.
Why?
He was a copper. He was on their backs. You're here to do the spade work. Get it right. We need those murder charges to stick.
Frost considers...
Well, call me old-fashioned if you like, but I've never been too comfortable with deciding who did what before I've seen the evidence. What about this £1,000 that was found in DC Fox's car?
Finley turns on Frost.
No one throws accusations of corruption at my unit. Tim Fox was not on the take. Never. Under any circumstances.
All right. Spade work is dirty business. See if I can dig up some evidence, but I can't guarantee that you will like it.
Later, a pathologist shows Frost photos of Fox's chest wound.
Single shot, fired when the victim was close, facing the killer. 38 caliber, entered the pericardial cavity directly, resulting in the cardiovascular failure that was the cause of death.
We found the bullet.
He hands Frost a packet.
Any sign of a struggle?
No bruising, no defence wounds. From the angle of entry, he hadn't even turned away. Not for me to draw any conclusions about his state of mind, but very close. Facing the assailant, as I said, and fairly relaxed.
Really? What makes you say that?
Relaxed enough to be eating. The remains of a burger. Meat, bun, lettuce, mayonnaise were in his mouth as well as his stomach.
Frost decides against eating some gum.
Perhaps it was someone that he knew. Certainly not someone he expected to kill him.
Frost waits outside the door of a house on a suburban estate. He watches reflectively as some kids stroll by. The front door opens.
Mrs. Fox?
Yes?
I'm Detective Inspector Frost. I phoned earlier.
Oh, yes, please, come in.
Helen Fox, a soft-skinned, fresh-faced young woman with blonde hair, shows Frost into a small but smartly furnished living room.
Don't I know you?
We met, didn't we?
Hmm?
When I was temping at Denton.
Oh, of course.
Please, sit down.
Thank you.
I'm sorry about the mess. I was just doing the tree when Mr. Finlay came round. Tim bought it from the garden centre only yesterday afternoon. I can't finish it. I still believe he's going to walk through that door.
I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to ask you some questions.
She gathers herself and sits beside him on the sofa.
Are you on your own?
I'd rather be Mr. Frost. People keep saying they'll come round, but...
No, fine.
Frost gets pen and paper.
When did you last see Tim?
He bought the tree about 2. He didn't stop, he had to get back to work.
Did he tell you where he was going, who he was seeing?
No.
Did he talk to you very much about his work?
About the cars?
Hmm.
He never really said much, you know. He used to like to forget about it at home.
I see. At home, if he came back late, what did that mean?
Anything. 10, 12, 1, I'd go to bed and he'd turn up whenever.
So he could stay out all night?
Not often, but now and then. You see, I didn't worry. It goes with the job.
When we found Tim, there was a sum of money. Do you know if he'd been drawing out his savings from a building society or a bank?
He had Christmas shopping to do.
This was £1,000 in cash.
Ray and Sam are at the door of the Cockcrofts' house.
Well, of course you'll come in. I mean, the busier it is, the less time... No, it's good of you, Dad, to think of us. I'll put the kettle on. Tracy? It's Ray English and...
Sam.
Hi. Ray, Sam.
Thanks, Mrs. Cockcroft. Hiya.
Oh, you know Alan. Hello.
In accounts. Well, we just thought if there's anything we could do.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, they certainly left you a mess. I tell you, they should be locked up for this.
Anne's brushing the floor.
Let's give you a hand with that.
That's all right, Ray.
Oh, Sam, dustpan.
Oh, no. No, honestly, you don't need to...
Let them. It's good to see a manager getting his hands dirty. We'll give your mum a hand.
Tracy and friends Anne and Sally exit. Sam sweeps up the shattered glass from the fish tank. Ray watches the girls go, smiling sympathetically, then kneels by Sam, picking up a shard of glass.
This is bloody stupid. It's just a game, Sammy. Just a game.
Ray cockily chucks the piece of glass through the gaping hole in the fish tank. Frost is back down at the reservoir by the site of Tim Fox's murder. He stands looking out at the water, pursing his lips deep in thought. Dorridge's car pulls up by Frost's Volvo. Dorridge gets out and approaches Frost holding the case file.
What are these tyre marks, then?
It's a mountain bike of some kind. Oh. The tracks start back there in the bushes. Clear in places, even though the ground's really hard. Nothing in the way of footprints, but we've got enough information to get an ID on the make of tyre.
Oh, good. Well, where do they go?
There are more tracks by the fence near the car park to Daly's supermarket. There's no immediate connection to the murder.
Have you followed them?
One of the Soccos did, with a dog handler.
Oh. Well, there you are. Ha, your walk will do you good.
Yeah, but, sir, if Federal Crime Squad know who did it...
No, just remember, as someone once said, we may be lacking in the sophisticated techniques of detection, but we more than make up for it with the rigour and dedication of our spade work. Go on, off you go.
At Denton Station, WPC Kavanagh heads a training session.
By using various filters to compare and separate information in the light of surveillance material, witness statements and forensic, complex and conflicting data can be simplified analytically by using these filters to single out individuals. We call these centre of the universe charts. Yeah. We can organise more efficiently and save time and money.
Extraordinary, Constable.
What is all this? Cartoon time, is it?
Constable Kavanagh is here to explain HQ's latest software, Jack.
Well, we haven't got time for all that. Right, listen up, everybody.
I asked for you to arrange for CID officers to have time free for this.
Yes, well, unfortunately, DC Fox's killer didn't get that memo, sir.
All right, now. Daily supermarket. What we're looking for is sightings of a mountain bike. Right? So I want you to talk to the staff, to shoppers, to anyone. Then I want you to move on to local house to house. Sergeant Dorridge is already there. He'll fill you in with the details, OK? So come on, let's go. Chop, chop.
The assembled officers follow Frost out, filing past a bewildered Kavanagh. She looks up at Mallet and sighs. Mallet, lost for words, smiles uneasily.
Well, maybe now is not such a good time, Constable. If you, there's some work in the collator's office. Yes, ask for Trigg. He's in. He'll,
Oh, I'll find him, sir.
It's good, yes.
Mallet, seething, strides out. Frost's at the late Tim Fox's desk.
What time did Tim leave the warehouse?
Around one. He said he had some Christmas shopping to do.
I see. What time did he get back?
Oh, I saw him at three. He was down the workshop.
We're planting cars.
Yes, I know. I've had the guided tour. The only name I can find in Tim's diary is a Peter Davidson, someone he was supposed to be meeting the day he died. Mean anything to you?
I'm not exactly sure.
What do you mean? You're not exactly sure you know the name, or you're not exactly sure that you intend to tell me?
I'd have to clear it with Detective Superintendent Finlay.
Look, I'm trying to put together the last few hours of a copper's life here.
It's about informants, sir. The governor wants them protected.
Yeah, well, Tim Fox could have done with some protection, couldn't he?
Frost gives a pointed look at Newcomb.
All right, listen up, everybody. From now on, this desk is part of my investigation, all right? That means nothing in it or on it is to be touched. That goes for this computer, all right? We've finished playing games, have we, Detective Inspector Newcomb?
Newcomb rises angrily, then walks out. Frost resumes his search. He dons a latex glove and opens a drawer, turning over bits of stationery. He opens another drawer and flips through the contents. He picks up an envelope and feels inside, pulling out an instant access account book. Frost opens it. The printed numbers inside indicate two recent deposits of £1,000. Newcomb wanders back in. From his pocket, Frost surreptitiously pulls out a plastic evidence bag. Finlay enters and sees Frost. Frost deftly slips the book into the bag. Finlay taps his nose conspiratorially.
We could do with a drink, Jack.
All right.
In a pub, Frost and Finlay prop up the bar.
Peter Davidson. None of your mob seem to know who I'm talking about. Not very good liars, are they?
Davidson's a car salesman who's giving Ryecroft the goods on his customers. Where they live, what they bought for 30 grand, that kind of thing. Tim made the first contact. The plan was for us to use Davidson to plant information about cars we wanted the gang to nick.
Was Tim Fox meeting Davidson the day he was killed?
Well, he was at the showroom where Davidson worked. It was a customer dude. As far as Davidson was concerned, Tim was a car dealer. That's all he knew.
That's all you think he knew?
Well, I can't guarantee you didn't smell something. Didn't tip off Ryecroft or Madicani. I can't risk you pulling him in before we make our move.
Any particular Christmas you got in mind for that, sir?
Look, I've talked to the SAPS in Cape Town. They're liaising with Brussels and Amsterdam. We go in tomorrow.
Oh, do you mind if I join you?
You're very welcome. And when it comes to the interrogation about Tim's murder, I'm sure you won't mind if I join you. There'll be no rank pulled.
No, I'm sorry. The course my inquiry is taking, I can't risk you being party to the questions that I shall be asking.
For God's sake,
I saw Helen Fox yesterday.
Is that really necessary?
Look at this.
Pulling out the evidence bag.
This is a building society account opened by Tim Fox a month before he was killed. Right, two large entries in cash, £1,000 a time. Now, I don't know who Fox was meeting in that park, but £1,000 in cash found in his car, that could be a third instalment. What do you think?
At a container plant, Finley and Frost are in a rooftop hideaway, spying through binoculars at Ryecroft and Madicani below.
That's Dick Ryecroft. Big guy. Fraud, protection, vice. 5 years in Brixton for GBH. Known to carry a gun and to use it. Now, Madicani's just moving over behind the container. Right. South African police had her for a bullion raid in Durban. They got the gang, but she walked out of court. They say the money walked with her.
You do know I'm going to have to question them before you, don't you?
I know Tim Fox's killers are down there.
This is Finley. Go. Repeat. Go.
An industrial digger bursts through the gates of the plant. Police vehicles surge in. Ryecroft darts behind a container and makes for his car. Madicani runs off. Police vehicles surround the area. Armed officers swarm from a van. Madicani picks her way through a warehouse. Newcomb and other officers position themselves around the site. Sniffer dogs at the ready. Ryecroft cowers behind a silver Lexus car. He checks the coast is clear, then dashes off towards a parked Jaguar. Officers move in. Madicani runs in her fur coat, breathless. Ryecroft grabs a gun from out of the Jag. Officers target him. Madicani's reached her Porsche. Finley's Vauxhall corners her. She grimaces with exasperation. Finley clambers from his car.
Good morning. I'm Detective Superintendent Finley, and this is Detective Inspector Frost.
Luck of the draw. He gets to go first.
Mechanics examine the wheel arch of a Porsche, one of the stolen executive cars that litter the raided warehouse. Newcomb walks past as a photographer snaps the vehicle. Madicani is escorted by two officers into a car, just as Frost and Finley enter.
Good. Keep it coming. Excellent. Words in from Cape Town, Lagos and Dusseldorf so far. Full house.
Dad, I've got something.
What is it?
Shooters.
Where?
Finley and Frost follow the young officer, who's approached by Newcomb.
Found something.
Newcomb gives a disgruntled look and moves off. Inside a warehouse, a desk drawer is open. It contains two handguns. Finley lifts up one with a pen.
9mm. 38, short barrel.
He sniffs it.
38 recently fired. Doesn't look like we're going to leave you much to do after all, Jack.
In a warehouse office, Frost lays a photograph of Tim Fox in front of Ryecroft.
So, what?
DC Fox, Regional Crime Squad.
Yeah, I'm very happy for him.
He was shot and killed last Tuesday night whilst investigating your car export business, Mr. Ryecroft.
Hey, whoa. Now, I don't know what Larry Finley thinks he'll achieve with rubbish like this, but you tell him from me exactly where he can stick it.
Now, Madicani.
Are we waiting for a solicitor, Miss Madicani?
I decide what I say and what I don't.
Yeah.
You know, it always amazes me what people pay solicitors just to be told to sit there and keep your mouth shut.
It's not about money. When I need a lawyer, I won't require legal aid.
Ah. Same with shoes. Yeah? Look after your feet and they'll last your lifetime. They say that you should always buy the most expensive shoes you can afford. It's a bit like lawyers. If you can afford an expensive lawyer, the chances are that he comes out of the same lodge as the judge. Look at these shoes. These shoes have been the most uncomfortable shoes I've ever bought. Bought them last year in a sale. False economy. Did you shoot and kill DC Fox last Tuesday night? A simple yes or no will do. Further questions will be asked when we get the results of the ballistics on the revolver.
This is crazy. I haven't shot anyone.
Madikani's face falls, her eyes widening. Frost leans over her.
I'd call that solicitor now if I were you. Not with a murder charge hanging over you. Don't wait too long. Because all the best ones will be on their Christmas jollies.
Madikani stares after Frost as he makes his way out of the room. In a corridor...
All done, Jack?
What do you mean all done?
I mean, I've got a lot of questions to ask those two. I've got a lot of people waiting for the answers.
Well, they'll just have to wait.
You've got the gun. What the hell else do you need to know?
Frost rounds on Finlay.
I need to know where that £1,000 came from. In the meantime, none of your squad can talk to the suspects.
Well, I hardly think that's going to apply to myself or D.I. Newcombe.
The Chief Constable wants this done right. Corruption leaves a nasty taste, doesn't it? You never know where it starts or where it stops.
In a lab, a technician fires a gun into a metal tube. The tube is connected to a tank of water. The technicians open it and push a rod tipped with a rubber sucker into the pale blue pool of liquid. Frost removes his protective earmuffs and moves to take a closer look as they fish the bullet out, slowly lifting the rod out of the water. They deposit the bullet on a small petri dish. Frost moves and picks up the dish, tipping it so that the bullet rolls around freely. He peers at the grooves on it. In the Mercedes showroom, Davidson looks up from his desk. Frost's perusing the cars. Frost strokes the bonnet of a yellow Mercedes convertible, then taps the front light. Frost gets into the Mercedes, making himself comfortable in the driver's seat. Davidson straightens his jacket and makes his way over.
Oh yes, very nice. Like the instruments. Seating's nice, a bit like a flight deck on a jumbo.
Oh, I doubt the upholstery on a jumbo would come anywhere near this.
No. I notice you haven't got a price tag. I suppose if you've got to ask the price, that means you can't afford it, right?
Style and status don't come cheaply, sir. Are you looking for one of these?
Or am I just wasting your time and making the place look untidy? It is Mr. Peter Davidson, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is. Were you recommended?
No, it's just that I recognise you from the Regional Crime Squad surveillance photographs.
Davidson stares transfixed. Outside...
So where did DC Tim Fox, the man you knew as Jim Thomas, come into all this?
He was selling second-hand cars of quality. He had the names of a lot of buyers and sellers, and I thought I could up the money from Dick Rycroft and split it with him. It's easy cash. And if a few cars disappeared. I mean, people got the insurance. No one was really hurt.
No. DC Tim Fox was shot. And he's dead.
Davidson's shocked.
Now, did you talk about him to this Rycroft or this Miss Madikani?
No, but I never mentioned him to either of them. Believe me, I didn't know he was a policeman. I didn't talk to anyone. I didn't know.
All right, come on.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, what is it?
As Davidson gets in the car...
I'm telling the truth, please.
All right.
Dorridge.
I just had a call from Forensic. They've got the ballistics on the Smith & Wesson.
It is the gun that killed Tim Fox. If Ryecroft or Maddie Carney didn't pull the trigger, they know who did.
Helen Fox comes out of her house with a dark-haired man. They move to a car. Frost has arrived.
Mrs. Fox. Sorry to bother you again.
No, that's all right. I know what you've got to do. This is Dennis, a friend of Tim's. Yeah. Inspector Frost is investigating. I was just taking Dennis to catch his train.
Oh, well, if there's a problem, I can come back later.
No, I can walk. I'd rather walk.
The man seems nervous and upset. He goes to Helen.
I just have to come.
She kisses him. The man forces a smile, then slopes off, head bowed. Frost follows Helen inside. Frost shows her photocopies of Tim's account book.
You knew about this account?
Oh, yeah. He aimed it about a month ago. I was doing some more temping. We were trying to save up for a holiday, but he put in £65, that's all. This is over £2,000.
Both of these amounts were paid in on different occasions. This one last week in Manchester, and that one the end of November in Birmingham.
Are you saying Tim's done something?
No, I'm just trying to fit the pieces together, that's all. Do you know if your husband was in Manchester or Birmingham on these dates?
Oh, yeah. If they're Saturdays.
Maybe what?
It's football. He's followed Swindon since he was a boy. He got to as many matches as he could. He'd always meet up with an old friend. Well, Dennis, you saw him just now. They've known each other since they were at school.
Frost narrows his eyes thoughtfully. A coffee shop. Dennis is at a window seat. Frost brings over drinks.
There we go. Now, on the last two Swindon away matches, right? Manchester and Birmingham. On both occasions, Timothy Fox visited a Wessex Building Society branch and deposited a considerable amount of money. Were you with him? So you have no idea about any money paid in either Birmingham or Manchester?
So you could have done in Manchester, I suppose, but not in Birmingham.
Yeah, why not?
He wasn't there. The night before, Tim rang, said he didn't want to go to the match. Could we meet up just to talk?
Talk? What about, Mr. Turner?
Him and Helen, he thought that she was seeing another man. He'd been suspicious for a while, and he didn't know what to do.
What was the name of this man?
No name. But he knew he was in the job.
What?
He's another copper.
Dennis walks away. Frost stares aghast. Helen moves into her kitchen. Frost hovers in the doorway.
It seems that your husband didn't go to a football match in Birmingham end of November.
He did. He was with Dennis.
No. He was with Dennis in Swindon. But someone else was in Birmingham paying money into the New Building Society account.
I don't understand.
Well, your husband met Dennis to ask his advice because there were problems between you both. You were involved with another man, a policeman. Now, who was it?
Helen gulps, then turns to look at Frost.
It was Mark. Mark Newcomb.
Detective Inspector Newcomb?
She stares, breathing heavily, later over coffee.
I'm not making any excuses. I started it as much as he did, but whatever went wrong between Tim and me, I wanted to get back to how we were. So I told Mark we had to finish it. That was when I realised I'd never known him at all. You see, we'd had fun, and I knew he was in deeper than I was.
You changed your mind?
Yeah, but Mark wouldn't leave me alone. I kept on seeing him, sleeping with him, trying to let him down gently. And when I told him that I still love my husband, he went off the deep end. He said he'd destroy our marriage, he'd screw up Tim's career. It started hitting me.
Frost watches her.
And you didn't tell your husband about it?
Mark was obsessed. I believe he was capable of doing the things he said.
Like what?
Tim's career.
Go on.
The Building Society accounts. The books went missing. Mark must have taken them when he was here.
She looks down.
So you think that Detective Inspector Newcombe had put £2,000 of his own money into Tim's account?
He told me last week.
Well, why would he do that?
He said he was going to fit Tim up for taking bribes. He had a car thief who'd swear he'd gave Tim the money for information. Whatever I said, he wouldn't listen. He'd convinced himself the reason I wouldn't leave my husband was I was just too scared. Scared of Tim. He kept on saying the same thing over and over. If Tim didn't let me go, he'd get him thrown out of the force. Even put in prison. And he was doing it, Mr. Frost. He'd paid in the money. I realized he wouldn't take no for an answer. He was out of control. He was dangerous, like some kind of stalker.
Wasn't it about time you told your husband?
Yeah, I did. The night he was killed. I needn't have worried about him and me. He understood. I knew how hurt he was. But he understood. He understood I still loved him too. But he's anger for Mark. You know, I'd never seen him like that.
Did he go and see him?
I don't know. He went back to work. I didn't think he'd take Mark on. I thought he'd go straight to Mr. Finley and get him suspended.
Frost nods.
And the night that he didn't come back home?
I took a couple of sleeping pills. I was in such a state, I went to bed and I didn't wake up till 8.
So since your husband's death, you haven't said any of this to anybody in the Regional Crime Squad?
Mr. Finley's already decided who the killers are.
Did you think there might be another explanation?
Yes, of course I did. I thought it could have been because of Tim's work. And I also thought it could have been Mark Newcombe. I'm not proud of being a coward. I believed if Mark could kill Tim, he could do the same to me.
In a church, a children's choir sings beside a wooden nativity scene. As Frost enters, a man and a woman, Mr. and Mrs. Harper, look at the door expectantly. Father Christmas moves amongst the pews, handing out gifts. He gives a parcel to a little boy. Mr. and Mrs. Harper look worried. George English, in one of the pews, spies Frost.
Jack! Jack, your hat! The general idea is you're supposed to take it off.
Frost removes his hat but keeps his coat on. He sits by George as the choir sway to the music. Father Christmas hands a gift to a shy little girl. Frost turns to George.
Hello, George. Long time no see, I see.
Same as ever.
How's your kid? Is he finished university now, is he?
It didn't suit him. First time I've seen you at a police car service. You found faith.
Hoping to get something from Father Christmas.
Frost rises and puts his hand on Father Christmas's shoulder.
Can I have a word, sir?
Father Christmas blinks unhappily from behind his whiskers. In the vestry, Father Christmas pulls back his cowl and plucks off his beard. It's Mallet.
The fact that Inspector Newcombe and Mrs. Fox were... Well, these things happen.
Yes, well, the reason she kept quiet was because she was afraid of him. Also, she thought he might be the one that killed her husband.
But you've got solid evidence against the car thieves. The gun was found in their office.
Yes, but only after a raid where Detective Inspector Newcombe was present. I mean, it has to be Newcombe. He's the one that put the money into DC Fox's account twice.
Extraordinary lengths to go to.
Yes, well, if this is true, we are dealing with a vicious and obsessive man.
Mallet eyes Frost.
Yes. Well, obviously it can't wait.
Right, thank you very much.
Oh, by the way.
If I do have to arrest Newcombe, I'm going to have Finley down.
speaking like a ton of bricks. If you could just, you know, phone him so clear the way, it'd be very helpful. Thank you.
Angrily, Frost parks up his Volvo outside the stairwell to some flats. He walks up to number 57's door, Mark Newcomb's flat, and reaches for the bell. Frost waits, straightens his coat, then tries again. Still no answer. Frost gives up and wanders back to his car. Frost's Volvo sits beside the row of garages that belong to the flats. He eyes them suspiciously, then wanders up to the one numbered 57 and tries the handle. He inserts a key. It slides in easily and Frost twists open the handle. Frost shines his torch into the gloom, illuminating paint pots, wooden cabinets, and a mountain bike. He wanders up to the bike, shining light onto the wheel. He reaches out, tapping the grooves of the tread. The Harpers are at the reception desk of Denton Police Station.
I'm sure there's nothing to worry about. Lisa's really only a few hours late home. She's, what, 16?
It's not just that she's late.
The point is, she said she was spending the day at her friend's.
We phoned Jane's parents.
Lisa hasn't been there. She left home at 10 this morning. We don't know where she is. She was supposed to be singing with the choir at church tonight. She's just disappeared.
Has she got a boyfriend?
No, I'm very serious.
My daughter is missing. If there wasn't reason for concern, we wouldn't be here. Something's happened to her. You've got to find her.
Newcomb arrives home. Frost in his car flashes his headlights twice, illuminating the young detective inspector at the bottom of the stairwell. Frost climbs out.
Jack?
Yeah?
What are you doing here?
Oh, just a couple of things, you know, just nagging me.
Sure. Come in, we'll have a drink.
Do you want water in that?
Yes. Same again.
Frost ambles around the flat.
Yeah. Christmas is always a problem after a divorce. Sana's got a bloke now. If it wasn't for the kids, I'd go away.
Oh, yeah?
Bringing the drinks through.
Here you go.
Cheers. Right, cheers.
They asked me, but they don't really want me there. I guess you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's a long time since anyone asked me round for Christmas dinner, isn't it? You must have been quite good. But it's like the shooting.
Years ago. More social thing, really.
I never found anything social about guns, I must say.
Frost examines Newcomb's trophies.
So, no real breakthrough.
Why didn't you tell me about you and Helen Fox?
Newcomb lowers his eyes, tapping his glass.
What she said?
No. Come on. Come on, Mark. You know that we don't do it like that.
We met at a regional crime squad doing Denton. I fancied her and we ended up having a drink. Then I bumped into her again, only it wasn't an accident.
Her husband didn't know.
I wanted her to leave him. That's what she wanted too, but she was frightened of what he'd do. He could be violent with her.
And when he found out it was you?
I don't know if he did. I wanted to take her out of it, but she knew him. She said he'd calm down and he'd accept it in the end. She was trying to protect me too.
So what you're saying is that Helen Fox was going to leave her husband to live with you and he was going to send her to you with his blessing.
She thought she could handle him.
Frost locks eyes with Newcomb, studying him.
Point is, could she handle you? Because you see, Helen Fox says the man that she was frightened of was you. She'd broken off your affair, but you wouldn't have it. You pestered her, you followed her and you threatened her. And you said that if she didn't leave her husband, you would get a graft.
What are you trying to put on me?
Murder.
Newcomb lunges at Frost, drawing his fist back, then relents and points a finger instead.
Someone should do you so hard.
Those car thieves never killed DC Fox.
Frost stares at Newcomb defiantly. Newcomb loosens his grip on Frost and moves away.
It was self-defense.
He would have killed her.
Her?
Suddenly, Tim started being reasonable. He said if things weren't working out, basically, he wouldn't try and stop her leaving. He wanted to go for a drink and talk about it. Money, what they do about the house. Helen went with him. He drove her into Oak Park and then he started shouting at her, hitting her, trying to beat it out of her who I was. In the end, she told him. That's when he produced a gun. She was fighting for her life. The gun went off. Could have been her as easily as... She ran, she got home, she called me.
Frost nods.
And you said, don't worry, because I've got a couple of car thieves that I can fit up quite nicely. All right. Come on, get your coat. You're going to spend Christmas in a cell. Well, you might think about telling the truth.
That is the truth, Jack.
Helen Fox wasn't in Oak Park that night. And the gun used to kill DC Fox was the one that you planted on the car thieves.
Frost's in a crowded pub. He looks across the smoky bar and spots some of Finley's officers. He makes his way over to them.
If you're looking for a drink, you've got the wrong pub.
I was told that your governor was in it.
Office. He had a few phone calls to make. Probably about you, sir.
Thank you.
Finley's office.
Mark didn't kill anyone. If you were any kind of detective, you'd know that.
I didn't say he did.
You got him in a cell, for God's sake.
Larry, you run a cowboy outfit. And if one of your cowboys has finally cut loose, I will find out about it.
Frost levels a stare at Finley.
You know what Mr. Mallet always says, don't you? He says there's no such thing as bad coppers, only bad senior officers. You got a strange way of asking for my cooperation, Inspector.
Yes, well, I'm not asking anymore, sir.
Frost eyeballs Finley gravely. Later, Frost returns to his car outside the pub. His face falls, his windscreen smashed, and over the bonnet is strewn a metal bin lid, a bin bag, and rotting vegetables.
That's a mess, Inspector. You want to be more careful where you park.
Come to something when Denton isn't safe for its own coppers.
I know kids who can trash a car better than you lot.
Allegations against police officers seems to be your speciality, sir.
Leave it, Simon.
The four officers climb into their car. Frost walks towards them. He approaches with a raised forefinger and leans over Simon's window.
I hope you're not thinking of moving this vehicle, because if you get done for drink driving, you'll be out of the force so quick your feet won't touch the ground. Have a nice evening.
Frost flashes a smile, then glowers. Simon and his colleagues get out of the car, blanking Frost. They walk off. He watches coolly as they walk off, then angrily swipes the rubbish bag and bin lid from his bonnet, hurting his hand in the process. In hospital...
Mr. Frost?
Yes?
A nurse leads Frost into a cubicle where a duty nurse is washing her hands. Frost clutches his crudely bandaged wrist.
Take your jacket off.
She turns to him and stops in her tracks. A smile creeps over Frost's face. It's Shirley Fisher.
Still getting into trouble, Jack?
Well, you know me, I changed the habit of a lifetime. Hey?
He sits.
Well, no surprise.
She examines his hand.
I'll stand there in the theatre. I think we'll be able to save it without amputating.
Oh, right. Thank you. It was, they done up my car, smashed the windscreen and dumped a load of rubbish on the bonnet. I was just trying to clear it away so I could drive off.
I see. And where were the police?
They were on hand immediately. I thought that you were in Scotland.
I was. Nearly 2 years. But it was a mistake. Oh. Not the first one. Anyway, I came back to Denton in the summer.
Doesn't sound as though it was the last one either.
Oh, I'm quite glad to be back. dirt in it. I don't think it needs stitches. Mm. You up to date with your anti-tetanus?
Oh, come on, Shirley, what do you think?
She smiles.
I was going to ring you, but I wasn't sure.
Well, you should have done. Why not?
He prods his hand. Shirley goes to a fridge and returns with a syringe.
Drop your trousers. Bend over.
His face falls.
You are joking.
Do I look as if I'm joking?
Huh. Frost rolls his eyes, then dutifully bends over a couch as Shirley holds aloft the needle.
And as I've got a syringe in my hand, could you do me a favour?
Frost winces asleep beside a newborn baby. Frost and Shirley peer at them through a partition window.
I think she's lying about her age. She can't be more than 16. She's made sure she had nothing to identify her. She doesn't want anybody to know who she is. And I've got a feeling she might do a runner.
I can't believe a young girl can come in here and give birth just like that without anybody knowing anything about it. She must have family. Where is she living?
Everything says she's living at home. She was hardly carrying any weight. I wouldn't have known she was pregnant just to look.
Oh, well. If she was living at home and no one knew anything about it, she must have been putting on a bloody good performance.
All it takes is enough fear.
Yeah. I'll get on to uniform. We can check out missing persons.
Frost goes. Shirley eyes the girl thoughtfully. Nighttime. In a back garden, a ginger cat sees off her rival Tabby. Sam Goodwin is hiding in the shadows. He holds up a marksman's rifle and looks through the sight, aiming carefully at the ginger cat as it ambles across the lawn. In hospital, the girl, Lisa Harper, is awake.
We had no choice, Lisa. They've been looking for you. They were very worried about you. You must realise that.
Do they know?
Look, they won't react the way you think.
My father will!
When they realise what you've been through, I'm sure all they'll want to do is get you both safely home.
I thought when I was strong enough, I'd just leave. When no one was around. I thought I could leave him here. And he'd be looked after. No one would ever know who I was.
I did know what you were thinking.
I just couldn't.
Lisa looks down sadly. Frost's face softens. The crosshairs of the rifle's gun sight tracks the cat as it pads across a fence. A flash of white light. Sam and Ray leg it through an alley. Ray grabs the rifle from Sam as they approach a car. They clamber in and speed off. Shirley strides up a hospital corridor.
Ah, Shirley. Mrs. Harper.
She is expecting you, but she's still very frightened and upset. The sooner you let her know there's nothing for her to worry about, the better. First on your left.
Mr. Harper glowers. Mrs. Harper braces herself and follows Shirley's directions.
Jack, If I don't see you...
No, Will, I know. King's Arms, OK.
The Harpers linger in the corridor.
You go in and say, I don't know what to say.
Then you better find something.
Mrs. Harper storms away. Her husband pouts unhappily as Frost approaches him.
Well, thank you for finding her, Inspector. If I haven't got much to say, it's because I'm still taking it in. You hear it about other people's daughters, but your own... Still too shocked.
I'm shocked too, Mr. Harper. So far, all I've heard is how it affects you. I can't begin to understand what your daughter must have felt like when she found out she was pregnant. 9 months with no one to speak to. No one at home that she could turn to for help. My God, you're lucky she's alive. If you want to do something for Lisa, Mr. Harper, for Christmas, you better start now.
Frost's eyes blaze as he stares at Harper. He breaks away, collecting his coat and hat from the reception desk. Mr. Harper turns and shuffles towards Lisa's room. Frost follows and lurks in a doorway, watching the family. Inside the room, Mrs. Harper cradles the baby. Lisa cuddles up to them both. Lisa looks up as her father enters, her eyes wide and fearful. Mr. Harper shuffles up to his family. Mrs. Harper looks at him, her eyes moist with tears, as her husband reaches out and strokes the baby's head. He crumples, resting his head on his daughter's lap. Frost, watching the broken man, allows himself a thin, tearful smile. Dick Rycroft sits on a bed beneath his cell window looking fed up. Frost enters with a tray full of food.
Ding-dong merrily, Mr. Rycroft. There. Just think of all the money you're saving on that holiday in Marbella. Ooh, no charge for Christmas dinner here, sir.
He goes, then turns back.
That's not to say there won't be any charges.
Next, Madikani, she's cross-legged on her bed reading.
Room service.
Handing her a tray.
Sorry, it's not quite Barbados.
Thank you, Inspector.
Oh, and if you're thinking of using the food as evidence of police brutality, just remember, I'm eating it as well.
Happy Christmas. And Barbados has not been cancelled, just postponed.
She smiles coyly. Newcomb is stretched out on his cell bed. He looks up irritably when he sees Frost enter with the tray.
I won't be eating.
Frost lays the tray on the floor.
Please yourself.
Kids will think I've forgotten. On Christmas Day.
I think you've got more to worry about than wondering what your kids are doing, Mark.
Can't explain that to them.
Frost makes to go, but pauses in the doorway thinking. He delves in his jacket pocket, pulls out his mobile phone, and offers it to Newcomb.
There you are. Just about get a signal. You've got 2 minutes. I'm outside the door. All right.
Newcomb grabs it. Frost goes, but lingers in the corridor listening. Newcomb dials eagerly. Newcomb blinks, impatient for an answer.
Hello? Jamie? Yeah. I'm sorry I couldn't get... Sorry, I'm working. Okay, it's a secret job. Very secret. Now, quick, go and get your sister. But first, you tell me what you got for Christmas, eh?
Outside, Frost sighs regretfully. A dinner lady slops mush onto Frost's plate.
What's that?
It's chestnut stuffing.
Frost curls his lip at it.
Have you got any baked beans?
Oh, Jack, chef's worked hard at this.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Oh, come on, give me some baked beans. I won't tell if you don't.
She dollops on beans.
Good girl. Thank you.
Kavanagh's getting cutlery.
Hello, what are you doing in?
Sergeant Brady couldn't fill the roster. I volunteered for a shift.
Didn't you learn anything as a cadet? Never, ever volunteer for anything. Come on, come and sit down.
I was just looking at the update on the murder of Detective Constable Fox.
Yeah, well, strictly speaking, that's CID.
I am attached to CID, sir.
Yeah.
Well, everyone says there aren't enough detectives. I want to be useful. See, eventually I want to get into CID, sir.
You want to be a detective? God, dear. Take my advice. You stick to your flowcharts and your filters.
I didn't join to sit behind a desk, sir.
If you've got a desk, hang on to it. Once you get the smell of what human beings do to each other in your nostrils, you'll never get rid of it.
Frost fixes a meaningful glare at Kavanagh before tucking in. She eyes him thoughtfully. The blurred image through a rifle's telescopic sight snaps into focus. The crosshairs target an array of garden gnomes and fake animals. First a gnome under a toadstool, then a squirrel, an owl, a rabbit. It finally settles on a large, red-cheeked, jolly Father Christmas. The shot shatters the gnome, splintering fragments over the lawn. Frost enters Denton Station. Brady is at the reception desk.
Oh, hello, Jack.
Hello.
Good Christmas.
Jack swipes his security card.
Bad news, the Indian was closed Christmas Day. The good news, the laundrette was open Boxing Day. I'm still trying to recover from what passed as turkey in the canteen, but apart from that, I've plenty of clean socks.
Oh, well, that's good news for all of us. Oh, Jack!
Yes?
About these cats?
Oh, yeah, what cats?
They're dead.
Oh, those cats?
Three killed over the holidays. Another shot last night, along with several now headless garden gnomes. Yeah. And RSPCA in this morning.
Oh, they do gnomes now, do they? Look, listen, I'm investigating a murder. I've got a police officer in a cell, international car thieves either side, I've got the regional crime squad trying to fit me up as a millennium treat, and you want me to solve the mystery of the headless gnomes.
Frost slams a door on Brady. It reopens. Frost's hand appears, grabbing a file.
Don't hold your breath.
Kavanagh's at her desk. Frost walks past her door, then returns.
Constable, do you have a cat?
No, sir.
Then you've got something in common with these people, though they did have cats until fairly recently. See what your software can make of the information in there, will you? Thank you. Good morning.
Kavanagh opens the file. Frost enters his office. Dorridge is working.
Ah, any news on that mountain bike?
Yes. The tracks did go into the park and out the same way, but forensics still can't say it was the same day Tim Fox was killed.
What about Newcomb's bike?
Well, it's an exact match for the tyre tracks in the park, but there's no forensic. Newcomb's bike's brand new, never even been out on the street.
Mm, well, it's a bit of a coincidence, though, isn't it?
Yep.
We'll talk to him about that later. Anyway, I'm off. I've got a few things to do.
Have a good time, sir.
Frost balks at this comment, then continues on his way. A blue Fiat Punto pulls up outside the King's Arms.
£2, please.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thanks a lot.
Shirley enters the pub. Her face falls as she looks about the bar. Frost's not there. She checks her watch. Meanwhile, Frost enters a bank. He fumbles for his account book and goes to the cashier's window.
Hello, Mr. Frost. Good Christmas.
I see. The difficult question's first, is it? I'd like to have some cash, please, if we've got any left.
She takes the book.
And how would you like your cash?
Oh, you know, I don't mind as it comes.
Then hands Frost some notes.
There we go.
Oh, really? A robber.
Fill it now! Fill it now!
No, don't. Do what he wants.
The frightened cashier takes the plastic bag and begins to fill it. The raider is masked by a black motorbike helmet. He points a gun at Frost's face. Outside, an accomplice revs a getaway bike. A panda car pulls up opposite. The WPC inside the car sees the bike.
Oi!
The cashier hands over the bag. The raider runs out as the WPC gets out of her car. He's too late for the bike.
Hit the alarm now.
Frost moves to the doors.
Move and I'll shoot.
ITFC audio description, Jim Apted.